I'm Savannah Harding, and this is Getting Better. Hi, my name is Savannah Harding, and welcome to the first ever episode of my new podcast, Getting Better. Whether you struggle from chronic illness or chronic pain, heartache or heartbreak, or whether you're feeling fine and are just looking to advance or enhance your health, welcome to a space that understands that health and healing is a constant practice and that we are all continually getting better. See what I did there? Okay. Today we're talking about the most underrated health regulator that you have most likely already done before, and it was probably the first thing you did after your very first breath. Today we are talking about crying and diving into the reasons why shedding tears can have such a profound impact on your well-being. If you're like me, you don't like crying. I don't know people who do. Well, actually, now that I say that, I have learned to appreciate it. I wouldn't say love it, but even though I've come to appreciate it, crying for me still comes at a cost. But the benefits have greatly outweighed those costs. Let's get into it. You might be wondering, why is crying the first episode of this podcast? And crying is the one thing that got me really researching what is beneficial for my health and how do I recover and heal and try to kind of get my life back after multiple surgeries in a row with some trauma and health issues and lots of pain and grieving. And the past few years, kind of starting from my whole life, I've had eye surgeries. I've had, I think it's 13 and it will be 14 as of next month. And with those surgeries, I wasn't able to cry because it would jeopardize the cornea transplants or the shunt that I put in for pressures. And long story short, it would just jeopardize the eye health and risk losing eyesight. And I would be in immense pain. Crying is always painful, but I would have cloudy vision for days, if not a week after. I couldn't see out of the eye. My eyes would be so swollen and red and puffy and painful. And it just was not what I wanted to do when my eyes were already in so much pain. But I had all this, this pent up trauma that I had to process and this grief of time and ability and desires in my dreams. And we don't have to go into that. But what I'm saying is when I would cry, it wouldn't be like a little cry. I couldn't just open the spout and have only like a little few tears trickle out. It was a whole fire hydrant just bursting, which wouldn't help because then I wouldn't want to cry for a while after that because it would always be so intense and painful and I would just reap the pain for the next couple of days. So I was desperate to find another way to release my pent-up emotions and find a loophole to the messy, painful practice that is crying. And what I've found will make you want to cry. But before we get into things, gotta say a disclaimer. I'm not a doctor. This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnoses, or treatment. It's information that I have sourced from scientifically backed research, and I myself am skeptical about shared information and sometimes random statistics, but at university, I studied how to discern what is sound research compared to unsupported claims, and I'll be sharing my resources if you'd care to take a look yourself. I encourage it. I enjoy research about our bodies and behavior, and I have personally benefited from applying this information to my own life. So if I can be a conduit for even one person's health or well-being, I've reached my goal. So grab your tissues and let's talk about crying. So before we get into the benefits, I think it's important to mention that we have three types of tears: basal, reflex, and emotional. Basal tears, BASAL, are the continuous tears that lubricate our eyes and fight infections. Reflex tears are your onion tears. They help clear debris from your eyes like smoke and dust, and sometimes they can overwhelm your drainage system in your eye, and that's why they can sometimes come down your face like emotional tears. But the last type, emotional tears, are what we are going to be focusing on today. There are a lot of fun facts about crying, and we're going to cover a lot today, but the main points that I want to get across, where if you don't want to listen to the rest of the episode, just trust me and take it to heart that crying detoxes your body of stress. It expels cortisol from your body. It increases your pain tolerance when you cry, and it self-soothes your body and the stress and works with the stress adaptogens to make you feel better. It enhances our social support and helps regulate our emotions and keep us at a balanced state to continue with our lives and what brings us joy. You don't have to listen to the rest of the episode now, but let's go. We all deal with stress in our lives. And at this time in society, there's a lot to make us anxious, a lot to make us stressed and depressed. And it's hard to not go to our distractions when we feel so overwhelmed. But I want to encourage you to listen to this podcast and to think about times when you feel so overwhelmed and you want to cry, but you stop yourself. Ask yourself why you stop yourself. Are you in a social setting and it feels embarrassing? Have you just done your makeup and you're not going to waste that money by crying and having to wipe it off? Do you just not want to look like you've been crying? Or is it that you're not ready or willing or accepting these emotions that are building up? Maybe you don't even know what the emotions are, but you just feel like you've reached that window of tolerance and you feel the urge to cry, but you don't. Because crying isn't fun. It hurts. It sometimes makes you look swollen and red, and there are reasons to this. So take a second, think about why you might not cry, and keep that in the back of your mind while you are listening to the rest of the podcast. So the first reason why you should cry is that crying detoxifies your body. When we cry, we release cortisol, which is the stress hormone that builds up in our system. So when you think cortisol, think stress. Not all cortisol and stress is bad for us, but it is good to be able to release the stress cortisol in our bodies. So there have been fascinating studies that show how crying can help expel that cortisol from our bodies. In the late 90s, scientists conducted a study where they measured cortisol levels in women's saliva before and after watching an emotional movie. The women who had more intense crying during the film had less cortisol in their saliva after the movie compared to the group that cried less. So that is telling us that more crying gets out more stress. So it's leaving your body. You're left with less stress inside of our bodies, which I think we can all have a little bit more of that. And a similar study was done with rhesus monkeys. And I would call this a fun fact, but I really don't want to believe it. We are the only animals that produce emotional tears. Other animals cannot produce emotional tears, which is really sad because like you see videos of these really cute dogs like tearing up. Maybe that's just their like reflex tears or basal tears. I don't know. But just like other animals, the rhesus monkey mothers couldn't produce emotional tears, but they let out loud distress calls for their babies. And the monkeys who had more distress calls also had fewer stress hormones afterward. Even though we're not monkeys, there's something to be said about the relief we can feel when we let out a good cry or even a good scream. It's physically expelling stress from our bodies. And while I was trying to find a loophole for all of my emotions, I tried screaming instead of crying. It was into my pillow, and it did help release some emotion but I was still craving a cathartic cry. To be honest, every time I stepped out of numbing myself to try to help process, I would be overcome by the fact that I was still in so much pain and dealing with so much trauma and honestly despair. And it was like, okay, if I'm not actually doing the thing, doing half of the thing just made me more frustrated and kind of added to the built-up emotions. That led me here, looking up if crying is really worth it, if there are other ways to release the stress hormones besides letting my eyes get red and painful and puffy and going through that. And so after the detox, after I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, I can scream a little, I can cry a little. What's next? Next is oxytocin, a hormone also called the love drug. Oxytocin is what babies get from their breastfeeding mothers. It is what you feel when you get a big hug after a hard day. You get a flood of it when you experience orgasm. And well, like I said, it's the love drug. Oxytocin decreases cortisol levels, decreases anxiety. Oxytocin reduces our response to threats, especially in social events. So those with social anxiety, oxytocin is your friend. It increases our calmness and our overall well-being. Think of like little babies latching onto their mom. It makes them feel safe. It makes them feel warm. So whether you're crying alone or with someone, oxytocin will accompany your tears. So you're releasing, you're feeling that oxytocin. And that all sounds really good. Okay, oxytocin this, oxytocin that. But why is it important? Oxytocin is also referred to as the bonding hormone. Again, think of those babies. When you cry, eliciting oxytocin, it's like you're bonding to the stress, allowing your body to familiarize itself with your response to the stress. So your body is familiarizing itself with the stress trigger, like stubbing your toe, and then you cry. You might cry the first time, but the second round, your body is so familiar to it, you have actually built up a tolerance to the pain of stubbing your toe. So this next time, you just wince. And what's crazy is that studies show that when we cry for long periods of time, our bodies also release endogenous opioids. Opioids, you're thinking drugs, right? You're like, whoa. So endogenous opioids, also known as endorphins, which ease both our physical and emotional pain, which is kind of crazy. Physical and emotional pain. So crying is like a natural painkiller for not just your body, but also your emotions. This is saying that a good, solid cry can heighten your pain tolerance, letting your body react in a better, less painful, natural way. So just ditch the drugs and grab some tissues. Oh, on to the next. It's also helpful to mention that evidence shows sadness is associated with low oxytocin levels. So contrary to popular belief, crying can actually make you happier. It doesn't mean that you're a sadder person afterwards. You might be ready to cry already. But before you do, let me tell you how you can level up your crying. The trick is to cry with a confidant, someone you trust, who will accept and affirm your emotions. There's a social aspect to crying. It's an outward sign that we could use some help or comfort. Some say that we can even smell crying on someone else, even if we don't witness it. But research shows that crying with a confidant is better for your stress levels than crying alone. And it can even boost your mood, not just soothe it. So not only are you bringing yourself back to a baseline, you're feeling even better than you did before you cried. When it comes to choosing a confidant, like a friend, women choose other women. And men, unsurprisingly, also choose other women. Let this be encouragement for healthy men to actively practice being empathetic, affirming confidants. We'll get into that a little later. Now, if you're by yourself and crying, I encourage you to try to knock on your person's door or call them on the phone. I will often text my people and ask if they're able to be cried at or hold emotions with me. And other times I just FaceTime them and one by one until someone can answer and be there with me. And it feels selfish and like you're dumping on them. And it feels super uncomfortable at first, but it doesn't take a long time to recognize that that's what good friends and true confidants are for. That's the gift of being vulnerable and sharing with people, because it makes you feel safe and heard and understood, and it soothes your emotions. And for someone like me, who prefers not to cry for a long time, crying with my friends takes way less time to work through than crying by myself. And remember that crying has a bonding factor, that oxytocin. So even if it's uncomfortable at first, it's so good for you and your relationships to cry with someone. And honestly, if you can just take that as your one takeaway, that's fine with me. Cry with people. And here's a little tip. If you truly don't want to talk to someone yet, set up your phone and videotape yourself or audio yourself as if you're talking to a friend, and you yourself can be that friend, or it could be like a prayer up to God or the earth or whatever you want to talk to. It helps work through those emotions. But if you just want to cry it out alone to yourself, we've got some more tips for you. Because I totally do that all the time. Just cry by myself. Now, at this point, I know some of you are thinking, I'm a guy. Guys shouldn't cry. Don't need to do that. Or crying shows weakness. I'm going to do it by myself. Or I just can't cry. I don't know why. It's just not me. And to start with this, I would regret not touching on the subject of men and crying. As taboo as it may be, biologically, there may be a reason why women cry more than men. Testosterone, a hormone more prevalent in men, may inhibit crying. The testosterone makes it harder to cry, while the hormone prolactin, found in higher levels in women, may even promote it. So men have more of the hormone that makes it harder to cry, and women have more of the hormone that makes it easier to cry. On average, American women cry 5.3 times per month, and men cry 1.3 times per month. So if a gal is crying once a week, a guy is crying maybe once a month. This can be due to the hormonal differences like we just talked about, but I also think it's fair to say that people perceive crying as a sign of weakness. We think this because crying shows that you aren't ready to fight. It activates your parasympathetic nervous system, your rest and digest. So, in our species that champions strength to survive, it's no wonder why men think that they can't cry in front of others. And I personally think this connects to the fact that in America, middle-aged white men hold the highest rate for suicide. And in 2021, men died by suicide almost 4 times more than women. Crazy. Do I think that crying with a confidant can single-handedly solve suicide? No, obviously. But I think that we could move towards healthier mental states if we held a better space for men's emotions and encouraged the healthy release of them. I know that was pretty heavy, but it's something I feel passionate about, is men's mental health. So ladies, I encourage you to just be there for the guys and positively reinforce their emotions. And I'll say this again later, but accepting emotions and affirming that it's okay to feel that way doesn't mean you're agreeing with the reason why they're crying. So you can be there, but it doesn't mean you agree with the exact same emotional process. And men, I really encourage you to think about why you don't cry. And if you've ever cried with a friend, and if you have in the last like year in adulthood, how you felt after, and if it was a positive experience, even if you felt uncomfortable. like if you felt like you could trust your friend more and that they were there for you. There's a lot of times where we are vulnerable and express our emotions or even say, hey, you hurt me, and it's met with defense or even offense. And that definitely reinforces us to be like, oh, I'm never going to cry in front of my friend again. But I would just really encourage you, and hopefully after listening to this podcast, you realize that it is so good for you and that it is something that we all want, I think, is to feel accepted in our emotions and feel like we have a safe space to talk about them. And it's just really good for your health. And this brings us to our next segment. On to spicy crying. The question here, is crying a turn on? Some people are wildly turned on by a partner sharing their emotions. A lot of women are. And there is a paraphilia, a kink, known as dacrophilia, where some people are actually aroused by tears, like a cry kink. And this leads me to an interesting study. If you can't tell by now, I'm like very into this kind of stuff. I don't want to just say science, but I studied psychology and medicine. I was pre-med. I'm not like actually a doctor. And neuropsychology, and I'm getting my master's in public health for mental health. So this is like my bread and butter. I hope you enjoy this information too. So the interesting study, men smelled vials of women's tears versus saline, and the sexual arousal went significantly down. I believe they were watching like a sexual movie. And so when they smelled the vial of saline, nothing happened. But when they smelled the vial of women's tears, their sexual arousal went significantly down. So crying might not be a universal turn on, but it makes sense that a reaction to sadness wouldn't be this jacked up energy when you actually need calming comfort. But I don't want you to forget about crying and the big O we talked about earlier, oxytocin, the love drug. It is still the best bonding hormone. It reminds me of in Failure to Launch. No spoilers here. But in order to get Matthew McConaughey to fall in love with Sarah Jessica Parker, it was her second move to cry over her like dying dog. It wasn't actually dying. And have him comfort her. The dog lived. But the crying bonding worked. And I'm not saying to lie, but you can cry. And the only friends I know that don't like when guys aren't touched with their emotions are those who are out of touch themselves and just won't admit it. So even though it's a turn off, it will bond you with the person you're with. This part was something I was totally not expecting. And ever since I learned this, it has changed my everyday practices. It's the patterns that happen when you cry. They also happen when you do a bunch of other things as well. But besides shedding tears and blowing your nose, when you cry, you might find yourself making certain noises, kind of like, you know, the crying, the crying sounds, like you're sniffling, you're huffing, sometimes you're wailing, sometimes you're like bobbing your head, like shaking it, or even swaying side to side or front and back when you're really sobbing. And these repeated patterns of behavior are called stereotypes. It's not stereotypes, I promise. It's like stereotypes. P's. But it's spelled like stereotypes. Okay. These repeated behaviors, like chewing on something, picking at your skin, or shaking your leg, are regarded as coping responses to our emotions. Interestingly, these behaviors result from the release of opioids, making it easier for us to respond to stressful situations. So if you're really wanting to cry it out, try really crying in the same pattern if you can, or shaking it out. And when you take those sharp, deep breaths, that brings in cold air and lowers the temperature of your brain, crazy, which is more pleasurable to your body. So taking in those deep breaths really helps calm you down. And this is also noticeable when people are just kind of anxious, or if you have too much coffee and you're anxious from that, kind of like tapping your finger, clicking a pen, or like bouncing your knee up and down. These are all stereotypes. It's releasing the opioids, making it easier for us to respond to the stressful situations. So as annoying as it is, you can recognize it in yourself as trying to get rid of this energy, this antsiness. And I started kind of like wringing my hands out, dancing, jumping up and down. But you know what's so beautiful about these is that so many things that bring you comfort or joy, whether it's dancing, singing, laughing, working out, or engaging in repetitive physical or emotional activities like chanting or clapping, or can I say gyrating? I don't know. These repetitive behaviors have the similar effects. It's the repeated pattern of behavior that decreases our heart rate. It decreases our stress. It increases those oxytocin levels and increases our overall calmness. It's wild. So shake it out, dance it out, hum it out, do what you can to soothe your body through moving your body. That even is moving your voice as well. All of this is to kind of bring our body back to a baseline. And it's crazy that it can even bring us to a better state of feeling even better off than we were before. Yale researchers say that crying restores our equilibrium. You cry when you've gone past your sad tolerance. You cry when you're past your happy tolerance. When we feel overwhelmed by our emotions, whether they're positive or negative, crying helps us release those intense feelings and find balance once again. It's like a reset button for our emotional well-being. I also think of it as like a post-nut clarity, but post-cry clarity. A little bit more accessible. So for those of you who are on antidepressants, you may find it difficult to cry because antidepressants numb your emotions. So it's not easy for you to reach the overwhelming levels where you would cry out of sadness or happiness. So whether you're not able to cry from antidepressants or other medications, or maybe you're inhibited some other way, try those repetitive actions like shaking out your hands, jumping up and down, letting out some big noises, or repetitive humming to elicit a similar response in your body. Another tip is to heighten your senses. So that's something like holding an ice cube, taking a hot bath, snuggling into something really soft, laying in the sun, or listening to music. The things that used to bring you joy might not bring as much joy on the medications, but continuing to do them and be mindful of them will widen your emotional bandwidth, which is healthy and I hope helpful with processing some emotions. Before I wrap up, I have some great questions from my lovely listeners. So we're going to do it kind of quick. Some people have proclivity for crying while others might find it harder to cry, or they only cry at beautiful things, not, you know, feeling sad. And your genes, hormones, traumas, environment, and even prejudices, they all contribute to your body's openness to cry. So if you're only crying at certain things, it could be that you don't feel as comfortable or as experienced with certain emotions. You could be suppressing more than you thought, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. But if you are concerned or just curious about why some emotions, you know, you don't feel as comfortable with them, talking with a counselor or a psychologist could really help you dig through what could be underneath. And I think psychological care is one of the best things you can ever do for yourself and for others. And it's expensive, but I encourage you to be honest when asking yourself why you don't cry or cannot cry in certain situations. It could just be the way you are, but digging a little deeper could bring massive benefit. In a later episode as well, I'm going to be talking about how to find physicians, including therapists and mental health professionals, with or without insurance, because that's something that I have a passion for. We do not have really accessible healthcare like this, and so many people don't understand how their insurance works. It's so complicated. I definitely think there's some corruption somewhere there, but look out for that later. On to the next. Why does crying hurt my head? I definitely feel this. It hurts so bad. I hate it. When you're crying, you're tensing facial muscles for a prolonged period, and that leads to a tension headache. Blood is rushing to your face to help those muscles that you're tensing, so you'll feel heavy in your head. What I've done that I think is really helpful is just keep like 2 spoons in the freezer, and once you're done crying, just like run them across your face or get a cheap ice roller. I love my ice roller. It was like $4 on Amazon. I'll put it on the website or link it somewhere here. But that definitely helps ease the post-cry pain. And just as a side note, cold temperatures help with anxiety and depression. It, like that cold air on our brain, it's very soothing to our nervous system. So even having an ice roller or spoons and just putting them across your face will hopefully help calm down some of those overwhelming emotions. Do I need to hydrate post-cry session? I've even thought about this too. It's like, are we losing all that water? So you are losing electrolytes because they're in your tears, but it's not enough to make you unhealthily dehydrated or just like normally dehydrated. When I didn't want to cry and kind of had to stop myself, I do these 2 things. First is I heard of this kindergarten story where this kindergarten teacher, every time someone would cry in her class, she would give them a glass of water because it would stop them from crying. You know, you have to breathe when you're drinking, so you get your breathing under control and it stops you kind of crying for a moment. And she told her class, you know, when you cry, you need to rehydrate because you're losing all that water. And so next time someone cried in her class, all these kindergartners ran to grab water and give them to the friend. And I just think of that. And it's so sweet. So I myself take a water bottle with me, like to my therapy sessions. I'm like able to cry a little bit more now, but before I would just kind of like take little sips, and then I always have water next to my bed. And so if you're trying not to cry, it's a good way to kind of abate that practice of crying. And it's great to hydrate, but you don't need to hydrate here. It can just help. Is there a time when it's helpful to not cry or to not validate the emotions behind the reason why you want to cry? You know, when you know that you won't be received with sympathy from someone else, I would say maybe don't cry if you're not comfortable with yourself, if you're not secure in your crying, because we can definitely be more hurt than helped if we're met with apathy or offense, you know, if we're like scorned for crying in front of someone. So that's when I would say maybe don't cry if you're not secure with it. If you're secure with yourself crying, which I hope you get to that point, I say let it rip. But another time when you might not want to cry is like if you don't want to turn off a male who's smelling it. You know? Now, I don't know if it's good to occasionally not cry to validate your emotions, but what I do think is important to share is that there's a huge difference between validating emotions and agreeing with the reasoning behind the emotion. So if someone is crying over their fear of corn, if I'm comforting them, that doesn't mean I now fear corn as well, but I don't know why I chose corn. But it's important to let emotions exist outside of logical reasoning. They can be connected for sure, but you're there to comfort people in their feelings, not argue if they're allowed to be feeling anything. And this goes for yourself. I do this, honestly, where I reason my emotions and don't sit with them. And that's almost as bad as stifling them instead of processing and getting the growth, strength, physical benefit from human emotion. On to the next. Why are tears salty? It's because they contain electrolytes, sodium, potassium, chloride, and also oil and proteins. and your emotional tears have less sodium, which is salt, so that the water is moving towards your salty eyes, making your eyes puffy. Also, your blood vessels open around your eyes and your nose and your face, and that's what makes you puffy. A side note, electrolytes give electricity to power our brain and move our muscles. And so it is good to hydrate and have those electrolytes. And it's interesting that they kind of fall out of your eyes when you're crying. But they actually had this hypothesis that our emotional tears have more protein in them so that they fall slower down your face, giving other people more time to see that you're sad or happy and then be there for you. So see how, like, we're already born with all of this in us? It's so amazing to me. And again, I'm just saying, utilize it. It's so good for you. And it's so well tailored to bring us the best in our life and in our health. Okay, so this is the last tip. I started taking pictures of myself when I would cry. It's not because I look good. In fact, I look horrible. But that's not the point. The point is that it instantly takes me out of the emotional fog and it grounds me. I think because it's a photo, it reminds me that it's just one moment in time, not a constant state. And I do think that crying makes you look a little pretty. Like, it swells your lips, it makes your eyes glisten for sure, and it adds color to your cheeks. But trust me, these photos are not giving that. There's like snot, my eyes are unevenly swollen, and it's just, I look so pitiful and so sad. But it helps me stop crying, honestly, and I end up feeling better. It also is a way for me to go back in time and give compassion to myself because I see where I've been and where I am now. And will I ever share those? I want to say definitely not, but who knows? If it'll encourage people, let's go. Maybe we'll start a trend of, no, I don't think that will be a trend of like posting your crying photos, but it's definitely something that I'd say, like, give it a go. Like I mentioned earlier, even recording yourself is a way to kind of bring yourself out of feeling the emotion, and it's more of a descriptor of the emotion. My good friend shared that her therapist says, shout out to Elizabeth, because I know you're listening. Her therapist said that when it's cloudy, it rains, which means when you have a ton of emotions and stress, those are the clouds. It's your body's way of releasing those emotions. You don't have to know why it rains. You just realize that it will pass and it might be inconvenient, but it's vital for our survival. So remember that crying has numerous benefits, from detoxifying our bodies and releasing cortisol to improving our mood and enhancing our social support. It literally helps increase your pain tolerance, emotional and physical. So it's thinking like, oh, you got broken up with. Oh, you got called a bad name. I don't know who's getting called a bad name right now, but if you cry about it, the next time it happens, you probably won't have to cry as long about it, or you might not cry at all. Crying is still so good for you, but it's expanding that window of tolerance, which is really good because we can survive more things and feel better and feel prepared. Might not be the best word, but it prepares us more to take on more of what life will inevitably throw at us. And it helps us then be there for other people who are going through hardship. So the next time you feel the urge to cry, don't hold back. Just give it even a social experiment. Just be like, hey, can I cry at you? Or even with yourself, if you haven't cried to yourself in a while, just let it happen one time and see how you feel after. And if you really don't feel good after, ask yourself why. Send me a message. Maybe we could talk through it. Who knows? But be comforted knowing that your body is taking care of you in so many ways. And if you ever need a confidant to share your emotions with, don't hesitate to reach out to someone you trust. In fact, if you can name at least one, if not three, confidants to yourself right now, I encourage you to reach out to them and thank them, or just let someone know that you are a confidant for them. You can even send this last audio part just saying, thank you for being there for me. And I want you to know that I am here for you. Let it rip. Cry it out. Have a great life. Thank you for listening to my pitch on crying. I wouldn't be spending this much time on crying if I didn't genuinely think it would benefit your life and bring actual healing and growth. My eye has healed to the point where I've been able to cry more, and each time I don't have to cry as long or as intense. And I cried today, but it was happy tears. But even then, I wouldn't let myself cry happy tears before, which is just such a bummer. And so I've implemented it. I kind of like gave it a week where I was like, okay, I'll let myself cry for a week whenever it happens. And it didn't ruin my life. And my eye actually got better at healing after crying. And so it's brought me to a better place. And I hope it encourages you to do the same. So here's to crying with confidence. I'm Savannah Harding, and I can't wait to talk with you again. My second episode is going over the things that have really helped me on my journey of getting better. I'd love it if you would listen to it. Thank you for hanging in for my very first episode. It's been a long time coming, and honestly, if I didn't have surgery in a month, I don't know if I would be posting this right now, because I'm a perfectionist procrastinator and so nervous to post this. But please give the podcast a rating, the episode a rating. If you have any comments or critiques, let me know. I am here just to make it better and to make it helpful. And it would mean a lot if you downloaded the episode, because the number of downloads in 24 hours of the episode helps boost the reach of the episode, so more people could hear about this and more people can get on the health train of crying. So thank you again for being here. I'm really excited for the next episode and just to see where this all goes. I'll talk to you soon. Here's to getting better.